What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like a bang, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to another episode of Real Talk with Zuby. Now, on today's episode, we've got on Ian Smith, who is the co-founder and co-owner of Attilus Gym in New Jersey. He is a freedom fighter. You've seen him all over social media recently. So welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Fantastic. So I've done a brief intro there, but for people who are not familiar with you, tell them a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. So about 18 months ago, my business partner and I came into the national spotlight because we publicly reopened our gym against the very oppressive coronavirus lockdown measures here in New Jersey. Kind of like right time, right message. You know, we weren't the only people to open, but we received an overwhelming amount of media attention and also government attention for our choice to open up. And we've been in a very heated, long and drawn out battle with the state government of New Jersey for going on 17 months now. And in the process, you know, we've acquired a platform where we do represent the ideas and the values of a lot of people, not only in the country, but around the world. So it's kind of grown from opening up a gym and fighting for the right to work and what we believe was a constitutional battle into something much bigger now, just more amplified and way bigger and more drawn out than we ever thought it would be.
Mm. And what was it that made you decide to open? I mean, that sounds like a weird question that I shouldn't have to ask because it's your business. Everybody should be allowed to have their things open. But did you stay open? So you didn't stay open throughout. You closed initially and then you reopened. Is that right?
Correct. You know, at the beginning, I think Frank and I, just like everybody, really did take this seriously. You know, we weren't thrilled with the idea of closing down because we were aware that that was a very slippery slope. So we were very apprehensive to shut down. But the fact of the matter was, with the information that we had, that seemed like our best choice. We didn't have the information to be confident enough to stay open and know we were right. We had our doubts from the beginning. So what we did is we just kept going to work because we had a lot to do. Frank and I had just bought the gym 8 months prior to the COVID shutdowns. Mm-hmm. And we bought a project, to put it nicely. And, you know, in the 8 months that we were in business, we were very successful and we were really turning the place around. But there was a lot to still be done. So Frank and I were still working, upgrading the facility, fixing things. But we started to pay attention to two things, the science and the politics surrounding COVID. And very quickly, neither one of those really seemed to add up and justify anything longer than a 14-day shutdown. And Obviously, that 14 days turned into a month, and a month very quickly approached two. And somewhere between that first and second month, Frank and I had an honest discussion about what we were going to do and the factors that came in play as far as opening. I mean, they were personal at the end of the day. Frank and I are two regular business owners. We're not these fancy gym owners who have 12 facilities. You know, Frank's a guy, he's 52 years old with five children, has never worked for anybody a day in his life, has been a very successful business person for 26, 27 years in a brick and mortar business that has become increasingly harder to be in business. And, you know, I've been in the fitness industry for 13 years and we put everything on the line to open this business. So it was about saving and preserving what we had earned. But also there was something much bigger at play. And that was we were watching the country and the world radically transform overnight. And neither of us felt very comfortable with the direction that we seemed to be heading at that point. You know, as I mentioned, Frank has five children. And I remember very specifically him saying to me one day when we were kind of wrapping up our day's work, he said, if I were to die tomorrow, I wouldn't feel comfortable leaving the world as it is right now to my children. He said, I would feel as if I failed them because something's not right about all this. And that was sort of the basis of our decision. We were looking at everything going on. And I think everybody knows all of the hypocrisy and double standards and everything that we were seeing. You know, we're 18 months into it. I think especially anybody probably listening is well aware of the reasons beyond that. And just wasn't fair. It wasn't right. It didn't feel right in our guts. And we made the decision to open. We made one promise to each other, is that we would see it all the way through no matter what. No matter what came, it wasn't going to be, you know, stick your toes in the water and it's a little chilly and pull out. We were jumping head first into what we weren't sure what was in front of us, but we had all the faith in the world that our decision was one that we were really comfortable with. And like I said, in our hearts and our minds, it was truly the right thing to do.
Mm. And what was the response, both from the public and from the so-called authorities?
So the public response was and has been just absolutely incredible. We've gotten our fair share of hatred, which is fine. That kind of comes with the territory anytime you step out. But we have gotten so much love and support and strength from people, not only throughout the community around us, but the national and the international community. You know, we sustain ourselves by selling T-shirts, and to put that into perspective, you know, we've sold and sent out T-shirts to all 50 states hundreds of times over, but we've actually sent them to 18 countries around the world. Mm-hmm. Because people truly identify with what we did. And as time goes on, something that really shocks me every day, even though I've been seeing it over and over again, is the fact that 18 months into it, people still support us. And if anything, more people support us and people support us more. Because it's become such this battle. And like I said, you know, a little bit of hatred here and there. The hatred typically comes and goes very quickly. The people that spend time online criticizing typically have very short attention spans, and they're outraged by the next thing. And just as quick as they're on you, they're right off onto the next thing. So we've had several waves of it, but it's not very meaningful and it's not very substantial. And
no doubt, man.
The amount of support we've gotten has been huge. Now, when it comes to government, the only thing that we've ever gotten is punishment. You know, we put our plan out there publicly in the hopes. We didn't have too much hope, but we wanted to do it just to make sure that we could say we did, that they would want to come and work with us. And from day one, they've been working against us. And 18 months later, they still do.
Yeah. And what was the first... what was the first warning or notice or communication you had from them, and who did that come from?
So on day one, we had several hundred supporters out in the parking lot of our little, it's not a little gym, it's 15,000 square feet, but we're in suburbia. It's just a gym and a strip mall. We had several hundred people out there, every news agency in the country. And we had members wrapped around the building, queuing up to come in all day. And about 12 o'clock that first day, which was a Monday, we had our first warning shot, which was the Belmar Township Police came, and a guy who is no longer the captain approached the door, and the crowd got a little rambunctious, and we settled them down. And I wish I remembered this guy's name, but he announced, you know, very sort of dramatically that we were all in violation of a governor's orders. And he took this long pause and he looked at the crowd and he said, "On that note, everybody be safe and have a nice day." And he turned around and left. and that was like, God, just even speaking about it, it was such a moment. Because it's funny now because we were like, "Yeah, we won." And then like,
yeah.
15 minutes later, Governor Murphy caught wind of it and directed the attorney general to call the Camden County prosecutor. Camden County prosecutor called the Belmar Police Department and said, "If you do not get in there and handle the situation, the entire department will be furloughed for 60 days without pay and we'll bring the sheriffs in." So second lieutenant stepped up, who is now the captain. He's not our favorite and we're not his favorite, but he wrote us our first of about 80 municipal citations that first day.
Okay.
And it has escalated increasingly ever since.
Okay. So at this point in the game, I don't know what the situation is in New Jersey. So did you stay open throughout when was it that you reopened?
May 18th, which was two months to the day of when they told us to shut down in March.
Okay, so you've been open from that time all the way up until now, is that right?
Yes, with the exclusion of two short periods. After the first week escalated, day one, they gave us some citations. Day two, the crowds were still there. Everybody was still there, and they started citing our members. So they were giving tickets to our members. Day three, they arrested one of our members, and then they were pulling people over as they drove to their house and citing them. Day four, we got a health department shutdown. Nobody ever stepped foot inside the building. We pretty much just ignored it because it basically said you're shut down because coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And then on that Friday, a judge named Robert Lugie, who has been sort of heavily involved in the case all the way through. In New Jersey, we have appointed judges, and this judge just so happened to be up for tenure this year. So whether or not he actually agreed with what he was doing, he has steamrolled us all the way through. And he put a court order to close, and they came and locked our doors in the middle of the night. Okay. They came to the locksmith and changed our locks. And at that point, 1 week into it, we said, okay, you know, we made our statement. We did our protest, and now we're going to turn things over to the judicial system. We're going to sue the state, and we'll let the checks and balances of the American system work as if they should. That never happened, and we sued the state federally. A federal judge threw out the case because we had existing charges within the state. Basically, an easy way out not to hear the case until those are resolved, knowing full well that they would take up to a year, if not longer. So at that point, we said, okay, you know, we're done playing games, and we picked locks and we went back inside. For a little while there, you know, our goal was to be open, we were trying to let the system work as if it should. However, these days it doesn't work the way it should. You know, what we've been taught about our governing bodies is very dated because they've grown, and they've adopted new powers, and the way that they operate is just, it's not really fair. But we wanted to give it a shot anyway. And that was it. And then it just continued to escalate from there. From that point forward, we have been open ever since.
Okay.
With the exception of the day that they arrested us, we were, we took about 2 days off, and then we came back, and that's when they barricaded our doors. And we came back about 2 days later, and we wound up kicking them in very dramatically. we did like the 300 kick through the door, which we did on purpose because we wanted to show the absurdity of all of it. You know, the reason we were so public was we had a feeling we were going to get into it with the government. And as they escalated, we were okay with sort of taking those punches so long as we could show the world, what these people were truly capable of when you disagree with them. And when you sort of, you give them that black eye and you resist, we wanted to show how far that they would go to ensure your compliance. So, you know, when they decided that they were going to board our doors up, we decided that we would kick them down and just sort of throw a middle finger back at them and, you know, volley the ball back into their court. And it's been a process of that ever since. And the ball just keeps getting volleyed back harder in both directions because it just continues to escalate.
So at this point, are you, I mean, I'm assuming at this point in the game, you're legally allowed to be open. I don't know the situation in New Jersey, but you're not still in any type of lockdown over there, are you?
We're not in any type of lockdown. However, in August of last year, they revoked our business license. So we have been operating without a business license for over a year now. In the process of getting that back, we actually had our arguments heard in court this Tuesday. The courts move exceptionally slow when they want to. So that's just the process of waiting it out. In the meantime, we operate by saying that we don't charge our members, which we don't. We've run entirely off of donations the entire time we've been open since May. And we continue to do so. And that's our way of sort of being open. We're essentially a rec center with a clothing store inside and an apparel store, a nutrition store. And it works. We're able to pay our bills, you know, just barely, but we can pay the bills and we can pay our lawyer fees. And that's really, that's as much as we need until the fight is over. You know, it'd be a lot nicer if it was different, but when you take up this fight, you kind of have to deal with the consequences as they come, no matter how unfair they may be.
Absolutely. So when you got into this, when you made that decision, did you fathom that it was going to be this long and this drawn out, this whole situation? Or did you think, okay, surely by summer or by the end of the year 2020 or something, this is going to wind down? Did you foresee it going as far as it's gone? I mean, we're now 19 months, pretty much. We're now, I think, approaching 20 months into this whole situation. I mean, every place is different. I mean, you've got places which are just wide open and 100% normal. I myself have been traveling through the states for the past 2 months, and the discrepancies between the different cities and different states is pretty mind-blowing. The discrepancy between different places, it's
very much
it's so odd. It's so odd, and it makes it so clear how political it is, especially in the U.S., because you'd have, you know, red states and blue states, and the vibe, the rules, the way people are behaving, everything is totally different. It's really, really different, and it's very strange when you see that and experience that firsthand. So did you see it going this far?
No, not at all, honestly. You know, we knew something was wrong. Just something didn't feel right about all of it from the beginning. We didn't realize how wrong it would become. And you know, it was just about lockdowns, and now it's morphed into this much bigger fight where lockdowns were just a part of what I believe to be a truly evil plan to sort of subvert just autonomy on a lot of levels. The idea of individual freedom, I think, is heavily under attack. And I think that the lockdowns were just sort of the intro to it. You know, it's continued to evolve. And it's more of what I would say is just an all out assault on the middle class. And I definitely didn't see that as what it was in the beginning. So absolutely didn't picture it going this far. But that being said, I'm also not surprised either.
Yeah.
Because we were very apprehensive about that 14-day shutdown. Because we realized that, you know, this is kind of how government in the past has worked. When it comes to overreach, they typically ask for a little bit first and see how much you'll give up. And then the rest of that, you know, typically comes. And we've seen that over and over again in history, especially even in modern history. It's happened time and time again, and it's happened all over the world in so many cases that it's kind of sad that we didn't see it coming in the way that we did.
Yeah. And what's the most common negative feedback that you get from the public, especially at that early stage? Because, I mean, back in May 2020, I mean, still a lot of people are on super duper high alert, but certainly back then, the atmosphere in terms of fear of the actual virus itself and the allegiance to all the rules and restrictions and lockdowns, it was even stronger then. So what was the response there? Of course, you had people who were lining up to visit and to train and to support you, but I'm sure there must have been a strong opposite side to that as well.
There was, and initially it was much stronger and much more, I guess, dedicated to voicing their opinion. With each sort of wave that came, it sort of lessened with intensity and lessened with intensity, I think. You know, in the beginning, and I don't blame people for being, you know, scared, especially within those first 6 months. You know, when you force people into their homes and you feed them absolutely nothing other than fear and just mania, you know, it's natural for people to respond like that, because I really do think that most people have a good heart and most people just want to make sure that they're okay and that people around them are okay. So I don't fault that initial anger. We knew we were going to face that.
Yeah.
That being said, you know, we did take this very seriously. You know, my business partner, Frank, lost his mother to COVID on the second day that we reopened. She went into the hospital on an unrelated issue, COVID negative, and contracted COVID in the hospital and passed away from it. And it was something that we understood that this was, you know, this is something that we were going to take a lot of heat for. So we tried to be really understanding with people. And Frank actually, Frank is the far smarter of the two of us, especially when it comes to science and the body. You know, most of what I know about the virus comes from digesting the information that he gives me. So Frank has always crossed his T's and dotted his I's, and we really did understand the virus as best we could as regular people, not, you know, not scientists in a lab, but we tried to talk and we tried to reason, and we tried to, when people came at us with anger, you know, there were certainly times where people got under our skin and we probably snapped back, but we tried our best to speak to these people and to say, hey, listen, why don't you come into the gym and really see what we're about? Like, don't, if you're local, don't rely on, you know, don't rely on the news to tell you what we're doing here. Like, come here and check it out and talk to us. And, you know, if you still really feel that way afterwards, then we totally understand and we still respect that opinion. But, you know, don't be so quick to fall into the trap that that they want you to, where it's just an emotional response to something that you're basically being told to be to respond to these things. So we really tried to communicate with people, and in a lot of cases we had long meaningful discussions with people, and sometimes we would agree, sometimes we would disagree, but we tried to keep that dialogue open as much as possible, because when you don't, the situation doesn't improve. Those feelings, you know, typically only get worse for the people that that feel that way, and that's not really what it's about. It's about conflict resolution. And you know, we did what we did because we thought it was the best move for the community as a whole, to provide a blueprint for businesses and churches and schools to be able to operate safely, while at the same time protecting the interests of people who have put a lot on the line, and protecting the interests of the middle class.
Yeah. Out of interest, in New Jersey, as a business owner, did the government and the authorities, did they offer you any subsistence through this? Was there any sort of scheme to help keep businesses afloat during these shutdowns, or were you just left on your own? How did they manage that?
You know, Congress, you know, our elected leaders, Congress here in the States, talked a big game, and, you know, during the shutdown, they said, oh, you know, don't worry, we'll have you back, we'll have stimulus checks, we'll have money for businesses, but pretty much par for the course when it comes to political promises. The money that was offered in most cases came up laughably short, if at all. You know, there's a member of our gym, he owned a tuxedo business, like tuxedo rental, stuff like that. And, you know, he had payroll to make and all these things. And he, you know, he signed up for the program. He actually got approved. And he got a check several months later for $916. You know, and it's like, it's almost like, you know what, why didn't you just keep it? You know, because he's got a full staff of several people, and that's not going to go very far. At Attilus, we did apply. We were told that we were not eligible because we had not been in business for a full calendar year. Even though we filed our 2019 taxes and we filed for our fiscal year and all that stuff, we were told, sorry. And then we were directed to four or five different programs. And by the time we got to one that would accept us, they said, there's no more funding available. Please wait until the next round. And at that point it was like, you know what? I'm not even going to bother chasing this down anymore, because we were hearing all sorts of things from business owners, like the gentleman who owns the soup place and other places, that, there was a lot of fine print with these loans and these things. So we, that was kind of one of the decisions for us to open. Is, you know, you guys said that we were going to be okay, and you said you're going to have our backs, and all you've done is play politics, and you've left us, you know, sort of out to dry.
Yeah, man, it's such a crazy situation. It's weird having these. I mean, what's really cool about it, to look at the positive side, is amongst this great sleepening that's taken place across the world, and all of these encroaching of authoritarianism and government overreach and tyranny and so on, is for people who do stand by their principles of freedom and of liberty and strength and courage, it's given an opportunity for them to really shine, right? The fact that we have come across each other and you've built your platform the way you have, and you now have people outside of, I mean, you're in New Jersey, but there'll be people literally in different cities, different countries, wearing your merchandise, supporting what you're doing, supporting you in the real world on social media. And all these minds, all these freedom-oriented people I'm seeing are connecting with each other. I'm seeing all these people connecting all these different countries, different cities, different states. And I don't know exactly where that leads, but I think that there's something quite powerful in that. It seems like people who are, dare I say, higher consciousness individuals, people who are more critical thinking, certainly people who are more liberty oriented, who aren't just going along with all the narratives and, you know, yes, sir, no, sir, exactly what the authorities are saying, even if it makes no sense. All these people are finding each other and they're connecting and they're supporting each other. And I think maybe in the long run, I don't know exactly what it looks like, but I think that in the long run, something good is going to come of that.
No, I agree. I think we're at a time in humanity, you could call it a critical point, where things are changing really quickly. The world has changed really quickly, and there's a lot going on. And I think that there's truly a battle to be had. And I think because of that, when you have these times when there's chaos, you know, whatever you want to phrase it, it does wake a lot of people up. And you've seen that. You've seen a lot of people, which I believe was probably our biggest mistake leading into this. The average person just tuned out of politics for a very long time. For one reason or another, it wasn't interesting, or, you know, we were all busy living life. You know, when it doesn't affect you in the ways that it does now, it's very easy to tune it out. And I think a lot of people did that, myself included. You know, I was just, all right, I'll vote for so-and-so, or a lot of times I wouldn't even vote. And I wouldn't, you know, people didn't know who their mayors were. People didn't know who was on their school board. So I think that's something that in addition to what you said, where people are now connecting, and as a result of that awakening, people are connecting. They're seeking out people that they can identify with, and people that they feel safe around, and people that they feel bring value to their life. And you're seeing all these new connections, whether that be people who have big platforms and influence, or even just regular, you know, regular people in connecting within communities and making a difference at the local level. I think it's an awesome thing. I think it needs to continue. And I think we will see that, because there are enough people, I think, awake at this point, that it's hard to stop. It's just a matter of, you know, where does all that energy go, and where do we take take it, and who's taking us there? You know what I mean? Because that there's a lot of questions that arise from these new movements. Is, you know, what is our ultimate goal? You know, we're all freedom oriented or liberty oriented, you know, but what does that mean for our society as a whole? You know, what is, how do we turn that into something meaningful other than just how we feel? You know, how do we bring that into our political worlds? Be that in the United States and elsewhere, because what you're seeing in the United States is mirrored in every other country in some form or another. We're all dealing with it. And we're all dealing with forms of out of control government. And I think people are just really starting to realize, maybe we're asleep at the wheel for a little bit, because it was almost like a light switch was flipped and the world was changed. But the reality is I think the world has been changing very quietly and very slowly for quite a while. And now we're just feeling it.
Mm. Have you been surprised by how easily Westerners in general, but perhaps for you specifically being an American, have you been shocked by how easily and quickly and willingly people have given up their freedoms and liberties?
Absolutely. I think that was the most alarming thing off the bat. Mm. You know, myself, speaking for myself, I've always been somebody who has questioned and challenged authority. You know, from a young age, I was not the most well-behaved kid. As I got older, you know, I tended to question things, and, you know, I don't follow every rule in the book. But now it was very alarming when they said, shut down, don't leave your house, don't go to school, don't do this. And everybody, myself included, you know, I said, okay. You know, we was like, all right, we'll just wait for you to tell us when we can do stuff again, government. You know, and that was one of the things that scared us was, you know, they just said, hey, people are dying. There's this thing that you can't see or that you can't touch. And you're going to have to surrender every right that you have in order to be safe. That's really shocking. But I think that comes with as a byproduct of a softening of society over the over the past years. You know, people who live a harder life tend to understand the value of freedom more than people who live a very comfortable life. And we've all, you know, living in you know, most countries around the world, be it Europe, be it you know, America or whatever, we've got a little soft. You know, life is very easy, so you tend to forget how valuable your freedom is, you know, until it gets stripped away. And for us, that was a big awakening for me personally, you know, and it's made me as an individual get a little tougher and focus on being a little bit more of a rugged individualist and somebody who doesn't rely on especially on government to make sure that you're okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we've put a lot of faith into a system that is proving to be very vulnerable at best, and I think broken at worst.
Yeah. I mean, something that's been so fascinating about this whole time is that, you know, supposedly, I obviously don't believe this and honestly didn't from the beginning, you know, supposedly this is about health, right? And health is being spoken about in a very perverse way, right? We are guys who have been into health and been into fitness for way before it was cool, way before it was trendy, and on a holistic level, right? Now health just means getting a needle in your arm and wearing a mask, right? It doesn't mean being in shape. It doesn't mean maintaining a healthy body weight. It doesn't mean being fit in terms of your muscles, your cardiovascular system, your internal organs, your lifestyle, your diet, your nutrition, getting enough sunlight, getting enough vitamins and minerals, all of that stuff. It's been mind-blowing how, to this day, I mean, 19 months in, the messaging still ignores that. I mean, in the USA, almost 80% of the people, I believe, hospitalized were overweight or obese, right? And it's like you're not even supposed to say that. You're not supposed to talk about it. You're not meant to mention it. There's been very little talk of
offensive.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
if you
been.
Say that, you get blowback for saying that you're fat. When in reality, you know, as especially if you're speaking from a public health or an individual perspective, telling somebody that they're overweight is coming from a place of caring and from love, because it's very, very clear. The science, as everybody loves to talk about following the science, the science is unequivocally pointing that if you are overweight, you are contributing to a multitude of factors that may live, that may, you know, end up with you living a shorter life. And public, you know, just like anything, government tends to put its hands on. It's never done well. It's never done right. You know, look at what's happened to the public education system here in New Jersey, or not in, excuse me, in New Jersey, in the United States. I mean, our public education system is quickly becoming laughable, and for years has been deteriorating. You know, and it just, that's very symptomatic of government touching anything. And they come in and they say, okay, we're going to get you healthy. But they don't talk about any of the long list of things that you gave, all of which are relatively simple.
Yes.
I mean, it does not take a, you don't have to have some advanced degree in health sciences or anything like that to understand some really, really basic principles. You know, everything that you mentioned is something that everybody can do. There's no restrictions on going outside and going for a walk every day. Well, I guess.
Well,
if you live in Australia, I guess there is.
Yeah.
You know, but these type of things, and I keep tying this in, you know, the more I talk about this with people, I keep tying this into this idea of individual responsibility. And especially America was once a country that touted the idea of individual responsibility. You know, for one reason or another, people came here, and they came here with the idea that they were going to work hard and they were going to make it, and they were in control of their destiny and pretty much all things, around their destiny, their health, their wealth, you know, you name it. And we're quickly becoming the society that isn't, that doesn't want to be responsible for their own, or we have a large portion of people who don't want to be responsible for their own basic caretaking. You know, people don't want to pay for their education anymore. They think that should be, everything's supposed to be free. Everything's supposed to be given to you. But if we start to reel that back and start to take accountability for our life and all aspects of it, our health, our financial health, all these things, you would see that government becomes quite unnecessary, or at least the size of our government becomes quite unnecessary. So I think that they play to this idea that they want you to look to them for answers instead of finding the ones that are very clear in front of you, and that just may require a little bit of hard work for yourself, you know, which is why you see people flocking to obey government with these very silly standards of health. You know what I mean? You see people walking around and they're very proud that they got this medical procedure, and that's fine, absolutely. But if you were to sit them down in a doctor's office and go through their blood work and stuff like that, you know, there would probably be some work that they need to do.
Yes.
And it's not going to come in the form of a pill or any type of medication that comes from big pharma. And we need to drop that idea as soon as possible, because health is about preventing illness and being able to handle illness in a way that your body was designed to. Whether you believe in God or whether you believe in science or some combination of the two, you are a beautifully and elegantly designed biological machine. Everything in your body has a purpose, and if you treat your body well, and if you give it the things that it needs, and you stay away from the things that harm it, you know, your body is an incredible, incredible machine that is just capable of some of the most just mind-blowing things. I mean, we can heal, and we can grow, and we can do all these things, and we've been so disconnected from that simple truth that we've lost. You know, there's people who have completely lost faith in their natural immune system. And want to just basically do like a subscription plan for their health for the rest of their life. It's incredible.
It's wild, man. The immune system is a far right conspiracy theory now. if you even talk about it, then it's really strange. It's so odd on so many levels. I mean, honestly, every day, like, because I've been talking about this for such a long time that I myself am a little bit bored of some aspects of it, and I would love to move away from it. But it's like, man, this battle is not over. You know, the battle just keeps going on and raging on. I mean, if we lived in a remotely sane society and our countries and states and cities were run by remotely sane people who actually cared, like truly, not just pretending to, but like could think holistically and do what's just right by the people. I mean, at this stage in the game, I'm just like, how is this still going on? I mean, I'm in LA right now, and you know, I'd say, you know, 40 to 50% of people are walking around in masks outside,
which is right, ludicrous.
which never made sense to begin with.
No,
right?
Like science is super clear that
that was never a thing, right? I mean, going to the gym, they want you wearing a mask during training, even doing squats, doing deadlifts. They want you wearing, even if you're the only person in the gym. Like, it's so odd. I'm just like, guys, what are you? I don't know how. I mean, I'm kind of reaching the stage. I'm getting a little bit I'm starting to just think that, you know what, like, if you don't get it by now, maybe I can't. And that's kind of sad, but you know, as long as you stay out of my business, that's fine. You know, if someone wants to wear three masks outdoors for the rest of their life, I support their right to do so. If they want to take a booster shot every 2 days, I support their right to do so. But the problem is that this is a one-way issue where you've had one group of people trying to force behavior and force compliance upon others, right? If you, I've said from the very beginning, look, if you want to stay at home, close your business, do this, do that, wear your mask, whatever you feel you need to do, God bless you, right? Like, that's your right. You're welcome to. My problem all the time, and I think yours as well, it's been the force. It's been the use of the state force, the use of the authoritarianism, the coercion, the threats, the harassment, all of that stuff, again, supposedly in the name of, you know, people caring so much about you, that caring so much about you that they're trying to force all this on you. Yeah, it's so odd to me. I just don't get. I mean, on one level, I understand it because I do understand human psychology and mass psychosis and how these things can sort of happen. But it's another thing to be living in it. It's another thing to be living in it. It would even be understandable if at least, you know, maybe if we were dealing with, you know, a virus with a, I don't know, 10%, 20%, even 5%. You know, death rate in the general population, then I'd be at least like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, fair enough. Maybe I don't agree with these policies, but
we all thought it was in the beginning. You know what I mean? If you remember correctly, they were, you know, they were showing clips of people literally dropping dead in the streets in China and stuff like that. But you're right. You know, it's I get sick of hearing myself talk about it. You know, I'm a fitness professional. I love fitness. I'm a strength coach. You know, that's my primary thing. I would love to just get back to that. Mm-hmm. And just shut up about COVID. However, you know, as you pointed out, you have one side, and primarily, obviously, you know, not everybody's this way, but primarily you have one side who just wants to be left alone.
Yep.
And the only reason they are in the fight is because the fight is being brought to them.
Yes.
You know, the only reason that Frank and I opened our gym is because somebody told us we had to close it.
Exactly.
You know, and somebody forced us and threatened us with a $50,000 fine to close it. But then you have this other side who's in this fight. And again, not all of them, you know, there are some people who just wanted to wear a mask and still continue to wear a mask. And that's their own personal choice. And they don't care if you do or not, overwhelming majority of that side feels entitled to tell you what you need to do, and then shame you for it, punish you for it, ridicule you for it, for not agreeing with them. And if it made any sense, which it doesn't, the things that they're doing should be enough for themselves.
Yes.
You know, like, it's, you know, if if the mask is so effective, you should wear. And again, these are all arguments, like, you know, these have been recycled in memes for 18 months now. Yeah. You know, it's not any breaking thought here. But, yeah. You know, the reality is that I think the beauty of what has happened is they have tied up the people with this battle within each other, while the politicians and the elite and the big corporations are just profiting at record rates, and they're just expanding their powers. And you have the people arguing over vaccines and masks and lockdowns, and they're fighting each other. And one side realizes how bad they're being screwed, but can't focus on the problem. And then the other side doesn't realize how bad they're being screwed and feels like they're part of the solution. Mm-hmm. And then you've just got this interesting dynamic where people are just at each other. You know, like I said, while Amazon and Walmart and all these other companies in the world are just racking in profits, and politicians are cozying up and you know, nestling into their career spots and expanding their power,
having their maskless parties,
they're flourishing. They are having parties, and if you can't take a second, no matter what side you're on, if you can't take a second and step back from the emotion of the fight on the ground floor and step back and kind of look at what's happening to all of us, you know, I think that's something that we all need to take a look at, and maybe the emotion of it will die down a little bit, and people will start to see a little more clearly what we all need to be focusing our attention on. Because you can still care about health, and you can still support your right to have a vaccine or whatever it is, and realize that the guy not wearing the mask and the guy who doesn't want to take the vaccine is not the problem.
Yes.
That the problem is government adopting this notion that they can rule by decree, and all these things that we've seen, where they can use police to sort of enforce basically whatever they say. And you know, you have situations down in Australia that are becoming very alarming very quickly with the way that the government is talking, even the way that they're talking to people. You know, the rhetoric that they use is incredibly threatening. You know, I think that's the biggest thing that people need to focus on, is stepping back from the Twitter matches, and really getting down and starting to hold, hold politicians accountable, and make some sense of this just mess.
Absolutely. You know, I feel like people should be absolutely angry. People should be absolutely outraged, but that outrage and anger is flying in the wrong direction.
It is.
I think that's, you know, the powers that be, people in politics, people in mainstream media, they've spun this narrative, right? So as I literally predicted that they would do, they've framed the battle, you know, the unvaccinated are now the scapegoats. Yeah. So for all their blundering and their malice and their idiocy, and all the nonsense that they've been doing over the past 18 months plus, they're now trying to pin the blame on people who won't just take the needle, right? And I don't like calling people sheep or NPCs, but that's literally how they're behaving. They just get that software update and they just run with that, right? They start using the same lines, they start blaming the same people. And I'm just like, dude, I understand that, you know, this is a high tension emotional thing. And actually, yeah, everybody should be mad at what's been done to people over the past 18 months. And I'm not talking about a virus here. Like, people should be angry with the way the responses happen. All the people who have been, you know, left to die without treatment, elderly people forced into nursing homes, businesses forced into permanent closures, people forced into homelessness and poverty. All of this stuff didn't happen because of COVID. It happened because of the government policies. It really, really annoys me when people blame things on COVID, which the government did, right? You're not unemployed because of COVID. That business, that restaurant didn't shut because of COVID. This didn't happen. That didn't happen because of COVID. It happened because of the response. And in many cases, it was predictable and it was called from early. And the people who called it from early were dismissed as selfish, grandma killers, conspiracy theorists, evil people, all of that. And That's what makes it so frustrating, because I'm not here. I don't want to battle. You know, if I want to battle someone, like I'm down to, you know, we should be battling and taking issue with the people who are, because look, we're not supposed to be the UK, the USA, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Western Europe. These countries are not supposed to be dictatorships. What is going on now in certain places? What's the difference between it and a dictatorship? Honestly, like, I know people don't like to
dictators
sort of...
Dictators are just honest.
It's just a dictatorship. Like, if someone can just come out and stand on a podium and say, okay, everyone who does... All right, you know, the New York governor the other day. All right, everyone in healthcare in New York who doesn't take the vac, right, where you're fired. Right? Like, yep. No one should have that power. Like, who...
No.
I'm sorry. Like, who made you that authority? Like, it's so bizarre to me. I think that's one of the weird things about humanity is you can kind of give somebody a title, and all of a sudden they're like, yeah, you know, no, this person is now a deity. Yeah. It shouldn't, you know, be like that.
I had a similar chat the other day. And what we missed, I think, was the, at least here in America, you know, I haven't paid attention to international politics, but in America, we've normalized this idea of executive order, which is this like rule by decree. You know, and that's been happening a long time, and it's not a blue thing. It's not a red thing. You know, George Bush really kind of kicked it off with the invasion of Iraq. You know, that was by executive order, you know, which totally circumvented the entire process of declaring a war and making sure the people were behind it. You know, even then at that time, he probably could have, you know, rallied the American people behind the Iraq war and our legislature like he was supposed to. But he just said, we're going to war. And ever since then, it's been happening more and more and more, you know. And what's funny is sometimes we applaud it, this idea of, you know, executive orders. Like when Trump was in office, you know, people were like applauding that he was using executive orders to build the wall, because they were like, yeah, we want the wall built, you know. But when that pendulum swings back the other way and those orders are happening and enforcing something that you don't agree with, then all of a sudden you have an issue with it. And it's like, you have to be consistent in politics. You can't, you know, cheer things on when it works out in your favor, and then be upset when, you know, the coin flips. But it's been normalized, and you see it all the time now where these people get elected governor or mayor or whatever it is, and instead of going through the process to make things legitimate, they just declare an emergency and write an emergency order, and then nobody seems to question it. Like, you know, it's just some guy or some girl up at a podium with a title just saying stuff, most of which is not true. You know, I've been watching some of these press conferences in Australia, and they're just getting up there saying like, well, life is never going to go back to normal because COVID, you know, so like, we don't know what to tell you, but like, you guys are just going to listen to everything we say. Yeah. And, you know, you look at like the death statistics, and it's like, you know, these huge areas are having like 4 deaths per day.
It's,
and
it's so, like, it's so weird, man. Like, it's so weird.
But it's become normalized where people are just like, all right, well, I mean, it's an executive order. What do you want me to do? My hands are tied. And it's like, don't listen. You know,
the thing is, so many people there, this is even in Australia, which is like the worst Western country for all of this, right? Millions of them support it. That's the thing that breaks my heart. What disturbs me is less the government being the government. I expect the government to be authoritarian and to overstep their boundaries, and politicians to get power hungry and want to be a little. I expect that. I know history. I'm familiar with what goes on around the world. I expect that. I don't like it, but I'm like, yo, that's a big reason why I'm mostly libertarian, because, you know, I just know the reality of it. But to see millions of people cheering it on, to see police assaulting protesters in Australia, shooting them with rubber bullets, curb stomping them, punching them, body slamming them,
choking,
and
all of it.
To see the response, and people are saying, oh, well, they shouldn't be out protesting. or oh, well, those people are putting others at risk. That's when I'm just like, man, you're gone. Like, that's what I just have to put my hands up. And I'm like, man, that scares me. That chills me to the core. And in Australia, you can't even leave the country, right? You know, if New Jersey or New York or California, or wherever you live, this is one huge advantage Americans have that honestly they don't appreciate is that you have 50 different options within the same country. Oh, yeah.
You know, I heard you reference that on the Tucker Carlson Today show. Yeah. I thought it was an excellent point, and it was something that, you know, it was like one of those things where like you know it, but when somebody says it, you're like, man, that's because it's true. You know, a lot of countries around the world, you don't have that same liberty to be like, all right, well, I'm going to Texas. You know,
you can't. You're just there. In Australia's position, you literally cannot leave the country. You can't leave. You can't go out. It's, I mean, that's a North Korea situation. Now, they had that in the UK for a little while. And for me, that was, I was like, as soon as that opens, I was like, I'm gone. You know, I don't feel like I can live in the UK again now. Right. Which, you know, is kind of bittersweet. I mean, I think I was going to end up leaving eventually anyway, but I didn't want it to be like this. All right. I mean,
on your own.
Exactly. I mean, I've been in all the, you know, in the few decades I've been alive, the notion that in the UK, they'd make it, I don't care the reason, right? Like they'd make it illegal for you to leave your house or to see your family or to leave the country or to go on vacation, right? Like how, what? That just blew my mind so much. And then, like I said, to see people, you know, there was a resistance. There was some resistance, but the resistance wasn't a majority. The majority of people were like, yeah, this is good. In fact, I still to this day see people saying, you know, both in the UK and the USA, people are like, hey, like we need to be, look at what Australia is doing. We need to do that, right? I'm scared of these people and their freedom. Like, and you're seeing, oh, man, when you're seeing people who, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger with his screw your freedom, Joe Biden coming out saying this isn't about freedom, this isn't about personal, I'm like, yo.
Yes, it is.
This is supposed to be the United States of America. I'm like, man, I'm a foreigner, and I'm like, my heart is breaking. I'm like, yo, what is going on? To have the president of the USA say that this is not about freedom, this is not about personal choice. I'm just like, man, this is gnarly. And it's also gnarly because you know darn well if Trump did that and if Trump said it and did some of these things,
oh Lord,
we know what the response would have been, right? Day. You know,
they would have had a field day.
Yeah. And it's suddenly like, oh, well, it's a guy we like doing it, or it's a guy I voted for. So suddenly it's okay. It's very odd. It's sad. I don't know. Where do you think this goes, man? Where do you think it goes?
I think that it's probably going to get a little weirder before it gets any better. I think that, you know, if I try to put myself in the perspective of these individuals, and I don't claim to know it all, but I think I have a pretty good read on who's in charge. And I think at the very, very least, we have a lot of people in politics, in very powerful positions in business and in other powerful positions around the world. And it's by no means all, but I think that there's a lot of those people who at the very, very best are extremely selfish individuals, who are only out to improve their situation and don't care what happens to others, in that climb to the top. Mm-hmm. And I think, in a worst case scenario, I think that some of these people are downright evil. And I think that they're truly bad people. And I think that there's probably a spectrum, of, you know, where everybody lies, you know, when it comes to this lockdown madness. And, that being said, I really do see a good ending to all of this. I just think it's one of those things where the only way out of it is through it. And if I was one of those people, if I was one of those selfish individuals or one of those, you know, individuals with bad intent, and I saw people waking up and I saw this resistance growing and I saw the apprehension for people to sort of get in line for medical tyranny, I would pull out all the stops to make sure that what I wanted to go through would go through. So I do think that things will probably get a little crazier before they get better. I don't think that we've seen the end of it at all here in the United States. And if you pay attention to the news cycle, you know, they're constantly ramping up like the next thing to be afraid of. And, you know, they don't seem like they're going to let off the gas anytime. I think it'll continue to evolve and they'll bounce between COVID variants and whatever emergency they need to, but they've gotten this taste of a lot more control than they're used to. And I just don't think that they're going to relinquish it very easily. But I do think that there is a growing and very powerful resistance. And, you know, a really smart guy a long time ago told me something. You know, I did 6 years in prison, and he was a guy who had done quite a bit of time. And admittedly, in the beginning of it, I was trying to figure out how to navigate it. And I was worried. I had expressed to him, you know, I'm like, I just want to go home, man. Like, I just got to stay out of the way. You know, I got to keep my head down. I said, a lot of these guys have nothing to lose, man. Like, they're dangerous. And he said to me, and he was a little older than me. He said, you think that? He said, but a guy that has nothing to lose has nothing to fight for. He said, a guy that has everything to lose is almost guaranteed to win if he realizes what he has. Mm-hmm. And I think people are starting to realize what they have in the freedoms and liberties that we did have. And I think people are, you know, I think the newest mandates with mandatory shots and stuff like that are bringing the fight to a lot of people's doorsteps.
Yes.
You know, and that's not a good thing, but it is, you know, mm-hmm. in the beginning it was small businesses who were being impacted and not to discredit anybody who wasn't a small business owner, but the best that people could do was support. You know, they weren't in the arena. They didn't have a dog in the fight. They were awesome in their capacity to support, but at the end of the day, the fight wasn't on their doorstep. And now with this newest encroachment of medical tyranny that we're seeing, everybody's got something to lose now. And as scary as that is, and I don't wish that upon anybody, I think that might be one of the best things to happen to us, because it's starting to unite people who were once divided. You know, I brought this up the other day. You're seeing people start to drop the labels a little bit and think outside the box, you know, and in two cases I can think of, you have like the thin blue line crowd, you know, the people that your right-leaning conservative crowd that always supports police. And, you know, they're starting to realize like, hey, maybe we can't trust these people. And they're sort of, you know, with what's going on in Australia, people are starting to become skeptical and drop this idea that like you have to support cops no matter what. And at the same time, you have an organization like BLM in New York City. You know, the New York City chapter or branch of the organization is bucking the national organization, where the guy who leads it is saying like, yo, where are you guys at on this issue? You know, where are you at with these mandatory vaccine issues? This is a black issue. Yep. And this is a guy who's involved in an organization, you know, whatever you want to say about BLM, but he's probably got a good heart and he probably really does care about his community. And now they're out there flipping the script, protesting, you know, alongside of the crazy right wing anti-vaccine. And that is a beautiful thing. That is a beautiful thing, because people are starting to drop the labels that they've clung to for so long, where you have people who, you know, and they probably still disagree on a lot of issues, and that's totally fine, but they're uniting in the idea that the power lies in the people, and that, you know, like we talked about earlier, we need to stop butting heads with each other and start looking at where the issues come from, you know, and politicians have done that for years. You know, they've turned stuff like race is a perfect example. You know, they've turned black issues into white fault. And it's not white people's fault that black people struggle. It's politicians and policies in cities that are keeping black people down. It's not the average, you know, white guys. So it's always been that divide and conquer mentality. And now I think it's just a perfect time where people are really starting to see it. And if they continue to, I see it going somewhere where we end up with a big W at the end of this.
No doubt, man. We will win. Good has to. Absolutely. Good has to beat evil, always, man. Ian, it's been so good to talk to you on this show, man. I love what you're doing. Massively respect it. I love it. I love the updates. I love the posts. I love the stories. I love the way you're fighting with your business. And, man, God bless you. I think you've inspired a ton of people, and I hope people can take something positive from this.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me on.
100%, man. Before we go, where can people find you online?
Online, I am loudest on Instagram, but my handle and name is Ian Smith Fitness, all one word. I'm on Twitter as well. The website for the gym is theatilisgym.com, and Attilis is spelled A-T-I-L-I-S.com. That has all of our updates about what's going on, our legal proceedings, stuff like that. There's information about the gym. If people ever want to come visit, we're always open to the public. We love when people stop by. If you want to support, grab a t-shirt, stuff like that. All that information is right on the website.
Nice one. Ian Smith, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot, man. Have a good night. Put some respect on my name. Sick like a ring, click and a bang. Y'all gon'
remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.